ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Warrior Connection. It is February 24th, 2013. I am Doug Rocky, Major U.S. Army retired, and also a Vietnam veteran, Desert Storm veteran. I will be joined tonight by, again, Denise Nichols, who is retired U.S. Air Force major, and was a frontline combat nurse during Vietnam, also did nursing during Vietnam. Today,
ladies and
gentlemen, right now is almost to the hour, 22 years from the start of the full ground invasion of Iraq and Kuwait. And tonight what we're going to do is invite everybody that participated to call in and have their memories ready, tell us what's happening, what they've seen since then, what they experienced, and how they're doing today. It's very important, ladies and gentlemen. This is 22 years to the hour of the full invasion of Iraq and Kuwait, launched by the United States and coalition forces. Denise, are you with us?
I am. And you know what, Doug? I want to say two things real quick before we start with our call-ins, and hopefully they're calling in. But you know what else? It's an anniversary of Tet 68, Vietnam, and reclaiming Hue City after the Tet advance. So that's interesting how dates fall together. Another interesting thing from history is the Alamo. The siege of the Alamo started yesterday and today, back in history of Texas history.
Well, you're a real Texan girl. I mean, you're an honest-to-God, full-blown Texan that carries cowboy boots and a six-gun and everything.
Yeah, I am Texan. I was born in Dallas, raised Dallas and Houston, and went into the military in San Antonio. From Dallas, I came in through Air Force Institute of Technology to finish up my master's and then went to Wilford Hall. That was during the Vietnam era.
I think all of us were in Wilford Hall at one time or another. I know I was there both during the Vietnam era, and I was also in Wilford Hall after we came back from Desert Storm.
And my unit when I left the active duty, I went reserve with the Aeromedical Evacuation Group at Kelly Air Force Base, one of two group sizes at the time. The other one was over in Florida, MacDill, I believe. So it was the 32nd and 37th, which were the largest group size. And when anything happened in the world, whether it was Panama, and our unit got involved with Panama, we had a group that was down in Panama, and then we had people receiving patients to Wilford Hall that were there at San Antonio for my unit. So, you know, the reserves, the aeromedical evacuation system, was highly qualified people. Many, many of them were prior service, came from active duty to reserve for a number of reasons, and continued to serve. We have had some that were our youngsters in the Gulf War that went on and served in OIF and OEF. So it's important to remember history and what's happened and the parallels of the time periods.
You were, during Desert Storm, you were a medevac nurse at Log Base Charlie with the U.S. Air Force. So as the casualties were brought out of Iraq, you were preparing them and then getting them all stabilized.
Yeah,
we
took in patients from three Army hospitals. I remember one was an Alabama National Guard that was toward Haffa. It was toward Rafa.
Okay.
Down the road that way. The other direction toward Albatim was COSCOM headquarters. Also down the road that direction toward Albatim was the engineer, the large group that had the engineer group under them that did the Kamacia bunker explosions, getting rid of the material there at Kamacia bunkers, which was, in case people don't know, it was like a fourth to half of the size of Washington, D.C., District of Columbia.
There were over 105 sites that we blew up when we made the decision
right.
in December of 1990.
We sat there at the border receiving patients at our aeromedical staging facility from three Army hospitals. And I remember the Alabama Guard, I think, the most because I visited their site and met their chief nurse and an EMT that was there the night that one of the Alabama Guard members went down up at COSCOM. And they tried to revive him. he died. The EMT later got in touch with me out of Alabama after the war, stayed in touch with me, and he has since died of cardiac problems. He had open heart surgery and stents placed in, and that was David Hindman. And his wife, in the past month, I would say, I heard from her, and he had gotten rated for PTSD and had had that rating for less than 10 years. It took her all this time from around, I'm trying to remember when he died, 05, 07, till now, to finally get the benefits for her children. But she continued to fight, not for herself. She is a nurse, a pediatric nurse, but for her children to have their educational benefits. And it took her until like a month ago to continue the battle. And those children are eligible for financial assistance for their education now.
Yeah, I know when we got already on the 23rd of February, Bowers Raiders, as you know, and you've had the opportunity to meet most of Bowers Raiders now over the years, and too many are dead now, as you know. Unfortunately, you know, on the 23rd, what we had, we were completing the instruction for the major command staff down at Riyadh and Eskan Village on getting everybody ready for the nuclear biological chemical warfare. And our order, what Colonel Bauer was ordered to do, was have all the command staff back at their office by 1300 hours on the 23rd to ensure that they could get the run-up and everything ready to launch the invasion at 0200 hours on the 24th. Which is just an hour ago now,
yeah.
22 years ago.
Well, let's take a minute and see if we've had any call-ins yet.
Have we got any callers in yet?
Answer up as you call in, please. No, I put the word out, so we're expecting some call-ins today.
Yeah, I've tried to get some of the command staff, contacted them, sent some emails out. Hopefully we can get them to call, too. But anyhow, what we had to have there is we were finishing up the last of the instruction on nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, the medical care and medical operations and NBC operations for the theater command staff. And as we finished that class right at 1300 hours, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, for all of us that go back to regular time now, Colonel Bauer had to send the message up to the command staff, and it went through General Zulus up to on up to General Yosok, and then up to General Schwarzkopf, that the train was on time, his staff was en route back, and they could go ahead and get ready for the full ground invasion. We have to remember that we didn't have the train in place, we didn't have the medical supplies in place, we didn't have the NBC supplies in place. Prior to the beginning of February, the end of February, just a few days before, to allow everything, and if you remember when you came in, we were having to do transfer between units to just get everybody staffed up with the NBC supplies because we knew Iraq had the chemical and biological because the U.S. Army gave it to them. So very critical things. Has anybody called in yet? Okay. Well, as we know what happened, we got all the units arrayed along the Saudi, Kuwaiti, and Saudi Iraqi border there, and we got that whole triangle area, which is kind of like a no-man's zone. And what happened then is we had all the Marines charging up right along the coast, and then the Army units came spreading out to the west, and then Schwarzkopf did that gigantic left hook and swung in there rapidly, and all of our armor and our units just tromped out over the Iraqi units, and there wasn't hardly any out there and charged right in onto Kuwait. So, again, forcing the Iraqis out. But, again, at the whole time, we got all the explosions. We got all the DU munitions being used, incredible casualties from that. We had to fly into Iraq and take care of the casualties. We had casualties from DU all over the place.
And we had the oil well fires that were started at the same time.
Yeah, correct. And then with the oil well fires, having, you know, with all that stuff, having to do the assessment, God bless Command Sergeant Major Jim Runge, who has now gone to the Angels. He was up there. And as you know, another very good friend of ours, Colonel Herb Smith, was up there. And also Colonel Andres Cornegie-Bonth, who has also gone to the Angels.
And Major Randy Hebert was a Marine going through the breach. He later developed ALS and then testified to the Hill. And then also has succumbed to ALS.
Correct. And then, you know, again, going back to the 92nd Medical Battalion, which was connected with the 330th and the command headquarters. Sergeant First Class John Sitton died of lung cancer. And remember, we tried to get all his medical care. You were actually helping me trying to get his medical care when he died. We'd already met. And John Sitton was the man responsible for putting all medical evacuation together under his 92nd Medical Battalion, which was under the command of Colonel Ron Carman. And again, the NBC NCO and medic for that whole thing was my best friend and partner you've talked to is Sergeant First Class Rollo Dahl. So these are individuals that were critical in the operations and putting everything together and make it happen. All the soldiers that charged in and made all the battles and everything else, they were there. And they're, I mean, that's where it's really at. But then all of us were sitting back there trying to make sure everything was prepared. They could do their job. They had medical support. They had medical evacuation, which was critical. You and your unit, and as you found out, a lot of the other medical personnel did get cross-contaminated from handling equipment and patients as they came through, correct?
Correct. I'm believing his name was Dr. Dietz that I got in touch with, and he testified on the Hill with Congressman Shea's government reform. But he had written a letter during the time of the buildup, being very concerned about DU dust being transmitted to medical people through their clothing as we got them back. When we got them, they had already gone through the Army hospital, so it was not as much of a risk, but was still there.
You got enough to get contaminated, Denise.
Well, exactly. And 9 years after the war, Dr. Durakovich helped me get my urine tested, and I showed trace amounts at that time, 9 years after the war. And if you remember, at that time, the DOD people were saying it's because of the water where you live.
We had a U.S. And, Marine right here in Rantoul, Illinois. He was told that his DU contamination didn't come from the war, current time, but came from the local water supply, and obviously that is total nonsense.
Well, what I did was, and I spread the word at that time, I went to the Denver, Colorado State Department of Health and pulled the records for the water supply for my area of town, because we do have rocky flats, you know, up north.
Yeah, we worked on cleaning that up, didn't we?
Yeah, and so I got the data, and there was no DU, nothing there to point toward contamination by water supply where we lived. And I remember telling a couple of the doctors on your team, because they were being told the same thing, and they said, oh, well, we'll have to go to our state health department and pull those records, too.
Yeah, so Colonel Little was told that his contamination, he treated most of the casualties. He treated him and Andres took care of me, and Herb Smith took care of me when I first got contaminated. But they were also told their contamination came from the local water supplies, which is totally nonsense. I think, has anybody called in yet? Do we have anybody online? Okay, there's so much to talk about when this is all happening. One of the things that's extremely important for everybody to remember in history, and Denise, you've had the opportunity to talk to everybody who was directly involved, is when we started the air war, and again, even so much more, when we started the ground war, all the Scuds were flying all over the place. I mean, every place under the sun. I think we counted 32 Scuds that came in on us down at the command headquarters area at Escan Village in Riyadh. 32 Scuds, I mean, all logged, and that happened. And again, the Patriots blew them up, but we did have impacts, and obviously, we lost a group out of Pennsylvania where the Scud hit the barracks. And again, and the other thing, too, out of Alabama, we have the Navy Seabees where the Scud came in chemical. And that, again, they were the primary subjects in Dr. Haley's work with the MRI looking at the brain contamination. So all this stuff is happening. The frightening part for us, and again, trying to reach out to the rest of our command staff today and ask them to call in, but hopefully they will, is the fact that we knew that the minute any chemicals, Scuds, or chemical weapons hit Israel, Israel had absolutely promised immediately a full nuclear strike on Iraq. And what we had to do, and you've seen the photos and everything, Denise, and looked at the documents at down at 3rd MedCom at the command headquarters in the NBC cell, Rollo and myself and Fales and Blissett and Bauer, we were working our hind ends off trying to plot the potential and probable nuclear strike zones such that we could get all of the medical care set up and maneuver our troops out of the area of the downwind hazard for the promised nuclear strikes by Israel. And that's frightening. Thank God it didn't happen. I mean, we have to put a lot of credit on the Schwarzkopf and Pagonis and all of those guys and Yosok and Dick Cheney and everybody for getting Israel, calmed down where they did not launch a nuclear strike and change Iraq into glass, which was had been planned thoroughly. Anybody called in? Denise?
I'm here. I'm hoping they call in today because it is the anniversary date and we wanted to hear from them. So we'll continue on with our discussion here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Doc, and hi, Denise. Denise, I'm a new Facebook friend of yours. I just want to say I appreciate all the work you're doing and getting the word out there, and I wish you the best of luck. My name is Jeff Nast, and I'm a Gulf War vet. I was in the 32nd Armored Regiment, which was part of the 1st Cavalry Division at the time. I was 20 years old when I was over there, and as they say, I was a fine physical specimen when I joined the Army, but it was a different matter when I got out. I was there for Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and about six months or so after ETSing, I ETSed in late 1991, I started having some, what are now the typical Gulf War symptoms. Like I had very, very severe chronic fatigue. I had headaches, skin rashes, GI problems, stuff like that. It took me a while to get my stuff together. I was trying to complete a college degree at the time, but I did file a claim with the Los Angeles area VA. The claim was ultimately rejected, and I just sort of kind of put it behind me. I had sort of a bad taste in my mouth at that point. And it wasn't until about 3 years ago when I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
That's what parts of the DU team came down with.
Yeah, my uncle had said, he had been following some of these things and said, they're looking at depleted uranium. A lot more information has come out about this stuff. You should look into maybe filing a claim or something. So I filed a claim about 3 years ago. I mean, I went through treatment. I'm thank the Lord, I'm in remission. The chemotherapy was pretty tough, but, I'm doing okay. But my claim's been out there for 3 years now, and I'm with the Philly VA now. I live just outside of Philadelphia. And the weird thing is, as I've been sort of getting mixed messages, the medical center said they're done with me, but the regional office says I need to report for another physical, and this will be, I just got a letter 2 days ago asking me to report for another physical. It'll be the fourth physical in less than 10 months. So I really, really, really feel like I'm getting the runaround.
May we make a suggestion,
Jeff,
that...
Jeff, before we continue on, have you tried to get into the War-Related Illness and Injury Center at... since you're in Philly, the Orange, New Jersey?
No, I've never even heard of that, no.
Okay, if you will just Google VA and WRIIS, it'll pop up. Just Google that.
Okay.
And then it will tell you how to get a referral from your primary care physician.
Why don't let me give you the phone number directly here.
Okay.
The person that, are you ready to copy?
I am copying, yep.
I want you to call Brenda Jasper, J-A-S-P-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
She's at Washington, D.C. War-Related Illness and Injury Center.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you two phone numbers for her. Her first phone number is 1-800-722-8340.
Okay.
And the other direct phone number is area code 202-745-8000,
okay.
8000,
okay.
Extension 6234. Now, I had a long conversation with members of their staff on Friday night to, getting on all this stuff. So if you call them and tell them you need the help and get everything set up, they will definitely help you.
Okay.
Now,
they promised me they will.
There's two units close to you. And a lot of times, if you go to the Orange, New Jersey one first, they'll work you up. If there is suspected neurological involvement, they'll refer you on up to the Washington one. Now, if you get your primary care physician, get that link off the Internet,
mm-hmm.
get with your primary care physician, show them the link. A lot of them do not know about the war-related illness, that they can refer people up there. Now, I would try that first before I call into them.
Okay.
Because if you get them started with the referral, and that will coordinate with them, because they get it electronically. There's a form they fill out online, the primary
your,
care.
Your primary care doctor, they did it for both Denise and I. Your primary care fills it out and sends it in.
Okay. And so you will get up there and have the full assessment. They may send you to Orange, New Jersey first. I've heard them sending people first to Orange, New Jersey. And then if they see other things, they'll refer you on up to Washington, D.C. There's only three of those in the country now. It's Orange, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., VA, and then the one out in Palo Alto. Now, they're talking about having one at Salt Lake City in Utah, but that hasn't happened yet. But so the East Coast all filters in through there. I would encourage you to get your primary care physician to fill out the application that's online, done completely electronically. Get it started that way before calling them.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is we have the post-deployment physical assessment form, a DD-2796, and if you email dsnurse1@yahoo.com,
or since you're on Facebook, you can personal message Denise Nichols.
Okay.
And we'll get you more info. And we're trying to load up info on Facebook. I just set up a locator page that's just booming right now because people want to find other people in their units. I've set up a shared information, which is the newspaper articles and videotape sets type of stuff. I'm also setting up two other pages. One is the research papers on Guffor illness, the actual papers. And that would be helpful to y'all to read and also to share with your primary care physicians. They're going to want the actual scientific papers out of the medical peer-reviewed journals. The other thing is we're setting up another page with all the research from the IOM, National Academy of Sciences, already uploaded. Keith has been helping me get that all uploaded with his nice handy thumb drive. And the GAO reports will also be putting on there the congressional reports, the Research Advisory Committee reports. So we're trying to load up libraries.
Now, the other documentaries we've done that you can get a hold of, obviously, Gary Noel, who is, you know, the leader of this Warrior Connection, put this all together. He did multiple documentaries, so you go to GaryNoel.com, you can find out about the documentaries we've done with them. We also have the incredible resource in the documentary Beyond Treason that we did with the Power Hour. So you can go to Beyond Treason website and do that stuff, Gary Noel website. Also, you know the website right for Warrior Connection. Another one where we did a lot of work was with Charlie Jinks and Sonny Miller, and that's grassrootspeace.org, G-R-A-S-S, roots, R-O-O-T-S, peace, P-E-A-C-E.org. And a lot of the reports and documents, regulations are loaded there.
Okay.
So you can contact them. If you contact the Power Hour and as a military veteran, you get a copy of Beyond Treason, which has everything there. And we've got resources out there. And once you put the resources to the doctor, they have a hard time disavowing it. And up at the War Injuries Clinic now, they have copies of it, and they know and they understand. And so Friday night they had made another commitment to help all of us. That's in Washington, D.C., under Brenda Jasper.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you very much for that information. I've got a lot now on my plate, and I'm going to start working through it.
And you're not the first one I've heard that had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably need to set up a page and catch the cancers and get y'all in a separate group because that is important. We're doing things ever since we started. Back on the old Prodigy Network, we were trying to get the info out that way. Websites were being developed. We were, if we went to the hearings, which I did, and we got the Rockefeller Report and the Regal Report, and that was before the age of the Congress really having videotapes of the conference that you can watch live and, you know, getting the things readily off of their sites. We were scanning those by hand and typing them up to get them out and get them distributed to people We also, you know, I remember coming home with Regal's report and making copies at Kinko's and having them at a meeting available just for the charge that I had for making copies. So, you know, we have tried all along. We have pushed. The Hill is being faster on getting things online and available to us. A lot of YouTubes of the old hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So we have pushed them to move into the 21st century.
We have
not gotten the RAC to do what the civilian chronic fatigue people do. When they have meetings with Health and Human Services, it's live video cast. Mm. And I've been bringing that up forever. I feel like I would get blue in the face from bringing these things up that would help us to be able to have people at home that can't travel, that don't have the money, to be able to hook up by the Internet and be a part of it.
Now, on the one thing is important to understand, one of our primary members of the DU team that did all this work did come down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So
yeah,
that is absolutely confirmed and everything else, so we can help you connect on that. And so that is acknowledged there. And again, when they look at the Wakayama report on depleted uranium, which on Grassroots Peace and Beyond Treason and other ones, you'll see the total confirmation of the cancer is totally acknowledged in the Colonel J. Edgar Wakayama report on depleted uranium to the Chiefs of Staff.
And so, what we have to do, Jeff, is we have to work them. We have to push the powers that be to get our presumptive list increased. Now, what they do is they turn to the IOM, okay?
Right.
We haven't had real good luck with them except a year or so ago when we had a good report come out, and it was headed up by a neurologist out of University of California, either Los Angeles or San Francisco, Dr. Hauser. And that was a good report after so many ones that we struggled with. But we have to push our legislators to push for more data out of the VA of how many cancers there are. And what they're going to do is they're going to rely on the IOM. But one of the basic things I do is I pull up statistics for the normal population and compare them as we find them on the Gulf War vets from Gulf War One, because if we take the total load of close to 700,000, you can, you know, mathematically figure out that we should not be seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what else were you, you know, at 22 years ago right now, I mean, we just started the invasion. What were you specifically doing at this time 20 years ago when we went in with the invasion?
I was in headquarters company. We were an armor battalion with mechanized infantry and tanks. I was a 19 kilo, so I was trained as an armor crewman. I was driving a Humvee for the executive officer, and who's actually the executive officer now is a full general. He's General Major. He's General Thurman. He's now in charge of troops in Korea, the entire Korean theater. Very, very gung ho guy. So we participated in some faint attacks up the Wadi al-Bateen, which is sort of near the neutral zone between northern Saudi Arabia and southern Iraq, and Kuwait would be off to the east. And so we encountered, some burning oil trenches, stuff like that. We did take some direct and indirect fire. And then after we did that, we pulled back, and then along with, I guess, we became a reserve unit for, like, the, I forget what they're even calling it now, but the attack coming in out of the desert from the west. And then we started driving towards Basra, but we stopped short of Basra because the ceasefire was called.
Did you go onto the Highway of Death at all?
No, I personally didn't go on there. I think some parts of my unit that were a little bit farther to the east may have been part of it. I never saw it personally.
So you drove along Tapline Road?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was right off there between the two, Hafa al-Bateen and Rafa. It was called Log Base Charlie.
Okay, I remember Log Base Charlie. Also, I remember I was at a shower point in Hafa al-Bateen. when a Scud missile landed in the town. Most of the town was deserted because, you know, the civilians had evacuated, but we were there at a hot shower point when the air raid sirens went off, and so the missile landed a few blocks away, and we hightailed it out of there. We went to full mop gear and then got the heck out of there.
What a shower routine, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it was like the first hot shower I think we'd had in, you know, probably weeks, and so we were pretty fired up for that. Fortunately, I'd gotten my shower before the missile landed, but some of our guys didn't. They had to get out before they could get showered. So so that was you know, it was an interesting, challenging time, and you know, I was 20 years old at the time, and you know, so it was a very, very rich, broad experience of different things, you know, of which I'll never experience again, and I'm grateful for that. But it was, you know, I'm paying the price for it now, and it's unfortunate because, you know, I love my country, and you know, I probably would do it all again. You know, stupid me, but you know, that's just how I feel.
I think you're expressing the same sentiments that all of us have, but again, it's trying to get the medical care and everything we need. That's what the whole key thing is right now.
Yeah.
Do we have anybody else that's called in?
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah.
Have you been in touch with other members of your unit that you served with?
You know, I've been in touch with, I sort of, when I got out, I sort of, you know, lost contact with a lot of guys. I've been in touch with one guy, a guy who lives in Northern California. He seems to be doing okay. You know, he's fortunately doesn't seem to have had any ill health issues. You know, I think he's one of the lucky ones.
That's excellent. Have you had any reunions that you know of?
You know, the funny thing is the 32nd Armored Regiment was decommissioned, you know, within a few years of coming back to Fort Hood, and so I think it was then recommissioned somewhere else. So it was, I know the 1st Cavalry Division has a reunion every year in Copperas Cove, Texas, but I have not, you know, I haven't gotten out there and seen any guys. I keep in touch with a few of the guys from the Scout Platoon on Facebook. I haven't been as forward to say, hey, you know, how's your guys' health? But maybe I should see if any of them have any issues.
Well, you know, since you've gone through cancer, I think it would be valuable to do a check. And what I encourage people to do is a couple of things. Number one is, you know, get on these Facebooks and read and catch up and start being involved with pushing for more help for us for health care and for legislation on our presumptives to grow that list. But also, I encourage people to consider setting up blogs and telling your experience, and that is awfully therapeutic too. But it also gets the information out there more so than we're doing on Facebook and websites to the general public to get them informed of what we're going through. The other thing I encourage is to set up unit-specific pages so that if somebody comes on Facebook and they're searching to find their unit, and it pops up in the search, and you get reunited that way. And one of the things that could be done on the unit pages, besides, you know, getting reacquainted with your fellow war buddies, is to do a survey and to figure out how many out of your unit you're in touch with and what their health problems are, because that's valuable info. Way back when Congressman Shays was having his hearing, I talked to a Marine out of, I think it was Syracuse, New York, and he went on a search based on talking to me, and I think they found 98% of their unit. And he did a survey, and he ended up testifying to Congressman Chris Shays' Government Reform and Oversight Committee. So it's in the official record of how many were ill, and it was a majority.
Wow.
So I think those are important things for all of us. It doesn't take me or Doug to make these things happen. We just throw out the ideas and say, come on, guys.
Yeah. No, I definitely think I'll do that.
So, and besides that, I think reunions are very valuable. You get to see each other, talk to each other. find out how each other are doing. And that'll only happen when people start getting back, you know, and getting in touch with their units. And I see no other way to do it.
The bond that we've developed in the military is very, very strong. I know I'm still in contact, and the bond is very strong with individuals that I went to basic training with during the Vietnam War. And then we served through the Vietnam War, got out, went our separate ways, but we continued together. And then with Bowers Raiders, all of us, I mean, you know, we can stay in almost daily contact with some of us. And that is extraordinarily important. You know, when the colonel put our team together back in 1983, we still are still linked together, even though that's 30 years ago. But again, that bond you developed is extraordinarily, and it can provide support, network, and everything else, somebody to talk to, somebody to listen to. We need help. You got to bounce an ID over there. It's extraordinarily important to have that. And that helps all of us get through everything.
I know I had, I was thinking you were another Jeff. Maybe I'm confused, but I had a individual that ended up in Dallas, and I got him connected with a Gulf War vet that's had significant health problems. And, you know, he had just put it out of his mind of the problems he had had, didn't realize that it was prevalent, and he was helped by getting two people together. They weren't of the same unit. But he is now back there trying to get health care and trying to get a claim through. So, you know, we have people that are struggling on the outside. They end up divorced. Their family's in disarray. And they've just kind of typical of, like, teenagers. You know, you're invincible.
Yeah.
And you think, no, this can't be related. And when you went to the VA early and they didn't want to pay attention, you know, that just kind of, you know, you get that taste in your mouth and you just try to soldier on.
Yeah, you get on with your life, you know, because it's almost a full-time job trying to persist, to be, you know, to persist and to deal with the bureaucracy. And I didn't have I had chronic fatigue. I literally did not have the physical wherewithal to do what I needed to do and conduct my life, you know, at the time. And so, yeah, so it went by the wayside.
Did you finish your college degree?
I did. That was my highest priority. You know, it was to get my education. And I managed to do that. But I honestly don't think I could have successfully pressed an appeal and passed my classes at the same time.
And did you go to work after that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, I went after that. I worked for about a year for a financial firm here outside of Philadelphia, and then I went to and graduated from law school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's fantastic. I've got my daughter's in law school right now, so I can understand what you're going through or have gone through.
Yeah.
There's a group out of Pennsylvania that we have, State Page, Gulf War, Desert Storm, and Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And Keith is up that way in Philadelphia. And so I try to also encourage people, you know, if we can't get the units together, and that takes a while to find people, but to start interacting at the state level and helping each other out. I mean, we've got those bonds that go back so far that we should be helping each other.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Well, thank you, Jeff, and everything else. Have we got anybody else that's called in yet? Is there anybody else hanging online?
Well, thanks, guys, very much. I'm going to go, and I'm gonna look up these links and stuff. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Yeah, we're always here to help you. Check our website. Check the, you know, Warrior Connection archives. There's a lot of help and a lot of things we've done before. And that's www.prn.fm, and you can link together and find out all of the information from there and listen to what we've done. We've had some pretty good guests on here that have given a lot of really good information to help veterans.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff, for calling in.
Yeah, the non-Hodgkin lymphoma, I mean, one member of our original primary team, and when I did the DU project, he had come down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma even before Desert Storm with his DU work, and then continued on with it. And the last time when I talked to the guys a few weeks ago again, he was still in pretty bad shape.
I want to say something. People, if you're on the Internet and you're a Gulf War vet, I want you to educate yourself on the warning signs of the cancers and the different cancers and stay on top of it. You're going to have to be proactive yourself and say, hey, I'm worried this may be a cancer. And then, you know, encourage your primary care that you need to have that worry taken off of you. So they need to do the diagnostic screening test to rule out things. And that really worries me. And one of the things I've brought up when I've offered testimony and when I've done public comment is the need for the VA to be very proactive and not just sit there and take a history and, you know, give you a pill for your irritable bowel, but to be very proactive and say, you know, they're probably at a higher risk for cancer. We don't know for sure. There's not a presumption there. But my goodness, with cancers, with cardiac problems, we need to have people say, we need to have them checked out. We need to have these proactive screenings. We need to consult them out to be sure they don't have that problem. And then we'll continue to monitor them, but at least rule out these major problems.
The other thing, too, and again, the VA has been moving towards this, and I had a conversation again with the RIST up in Washington, the patient-aligned care team. And what the VA is planning, and we're not seeing it yet, but what they have to have is very coordinated care. So you've got your primary care physician, you've got your neurologist, you've got the gastrointestinologist, you've got the cardiac expert, you've got the guy that's doing physical rehab, you've got your psychologist, to where it's an entire team care all the way across, because all this is interrelated. One thing that I've had the conversation, just from my own experience, and again, Bob Haley has nailed this down solidly with his work, is we know the brain is absolutely damaged because of the chemical toxicities and everything else. So what we start seeing sometimes is PTSD function, and we think it's a mental health issue. It's not at all. It's an actual neurophysiology issue, and this is where Haley's research is so critical on this. So, again, tying it all together, I don't know. I can't emphasize enough.
And there's some basic things, Doug, on the neurological damage. The autonomic nervous system is involved, and you've gone through this. I've gone through this for years, but... if you can do some basic things, and you were taught this in Buddy Care, but if people can do some basic things at home and then be sure they're following up at the VA, but if you can take your pulse rate laying down, both left and right arm, have your wife or significant other record it, then sit up and sit up for 5-10 minutes, then take those pulse rates again, left arm and right arm. And I would recommend taking it for a full minute. Don't, you know, take it for 15 and multiply. Take it for a full minute. Then record that and then stand up for 10 minutes. Now, normally you're not going to have a change of greater than, I would say, 10 on your pulse rate. If you're having pulse rate changes greater than 10, that needs to be pointed out. They need to be monitoring you at the VA, and they also need to do blood pressures in your extremities.
Yeah, one of the things, again, with Dr. Me and Lee up at the Warren G's Clinic with all of us, when he started looking at the blood pressures and the pulse rates simultaneously in the different extremities and from being sedentary to get up and climbing and walking and turning upside down, we started seeing, on us and on others, we started seeing significant differences, which again is pointing at incredible problems with the entire neurological system. And so, again, stuff that we have to be aware of. I guess there's so much. I'm sitting there coming back, and for me, 22 years again, because at the command staff, we were so worried about making sure everybody had medical care, we had all the supplies in place. We knew the intelligence, what was going to happen, what we were anticipating. So it was very frightening for us. And, again, that's one of the reasons why Bowers Raiders has been so strong advocates since day one on this whole thing and done everything they could. And now
and,
many
you know, I think about this, Doug, and, for so many years we had people that believed it was a vaccine, the depleted uranium, the chemicals.
It's been all of it together.
The sand, the dirty sand, and sand is, if you look into it, silicosis. It's a whole gamut, and we should not be so stuck that we're focusing on one exposure versus another, but focus on your body. Focus on your body and what your body is showing us. That's what we're trying to get them to focus on now, is to focus on the diagnostic testing that can be done. And some of that is still research-based. I mean, Dr. Haley went out to try to create the gold standard for the neurological, and he's done that. I wish the VA would start putting into clinical practice now. But we've done a lot of that neurological work. There's a little bit more to be done, but we also have other work to be done and diagnostic on the infectious diseases that have not been added to the presumptions, to look at things in the body that are affected by all this, being the blood flow, being the blood itself, being potential for cancers. But we have to continue. Some people get very angry at me because they go, we've had 22 years of research. What they don't realize, because they weren't there in person and watching the battles as we went through it, was that the VA was focused on PTSD, purely focused on stress PTSD.
Well, that was a decision that was made. We were at the conference 10 years after the fact in Washington, D.C., where Dr.
And
Charlie Engel from Washington, from Walter Reed, was still pushing.
And so the VA and the DOD research up until we had a handful, like Dr. Haley, we had Dr. Avadane at Duke University, we had Dr. Bucafaso out of University of Georgia Pharmacology College. We had a handful, and those handful gave us the research that gave us something to hang our hat on of something is different. They're finding things. Now, they were in the minority, but it kept us alive. It gave us the option to get the claims of legislation going. It gave us the push to keep going, and people have to realize that. That handful, that very small handful of PhD researchers made a difference for us in getting things that we got instituted by law. And then, you know, we still were battling them when it came to round 05. And it was Dennis Kucinich and Senator Sanders, who had been Representative Sanders, that said, we still need some funds to do this research, and we need to get it away from the VA because they're not doing the research I'll need. So we went to the DOD Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program. We fought for the funding, for 06 funding. And so it's only been, 12 years now. And people have to realize that we have to have the peer review process to award, you know, to recommend which one should be funded. It can take another year for them to get through the contracting process with the DOD. And then these programs are 1, 2, or 3 years long to do the study itself and then compile it and get it published.
Well, see, one of the things that was frustrating for Bowers Raiders and all of us is we had a lot of the information, all these complex toxic exposures, and so the knowledge that those exposures called the medical problems are there, and the medical care has always been laid out. One thing, again, was very interesting, again, on just on Friday, this is Sunday today, U.S. House Speaker John Boehner, who's the head guy in the House of Representatives, has jumped all over General Shinseki again with regards to the VBA, the Veterans Benefit Administration, who is responsible for handling the claims. And, I mean, the direct thing here is Boehner, Veterans Claim System is broken. So that's the head's lead line on this story. And, again, you can read this on www.armytimes.com. It's still posted up there. But again, so the work we're doing is getting through the U.S. House and the Senate, and they're recognizing and trying to get the VA to be held accountable. But
what
we
I wanted to say
is
was
everybody yelling and screaming at the top of the lungs.
We still need some of the good research. We have consortiums now being funded with civilian universities. That is going to speed us up to get civilian universities working together with experts to get the rest of the work we need. And what we're targeting on is not only diagnostic abilities, new diagnostic testing methods, but also some treatment. That's what we've been pushing for all along, is treatment. And, you know, I'm trying to work on them, the researchers, as they put their research studies out, in their summary, in their conclusion, they need to start talking about how the clinician, how the VA physician should be utilizing and using this research so that it gets out into the clinical area where the Gulf War vets are meeting their doctors it needs to get to that level so that we can turn around things quicker. But I want to tell people, this has happened by a small group of Gulf War veterans. Call them rebels. You know, we weren't going to sit down and take this. We saw the problems that were developing. We got out there. We testified. We pushed. And there were people back home writing letters and helping when we had legislation. But this has not been a give me. This has been a battle that has raged for 22 years. And veterans need to know that they can also participate in this and help this process along. And yes, it's almost full time to keep up with your doctor schedules and to fight your claim, but there's still some time left over that you can do some positive things and get informed in the history of what we've gone through, where we need to go in the future, and help. Not only help each other, but help that bigger picture.
Again, I'm making a call, and if anybody else on the command staff, the generals and General Shinseki, Colonel Gingrich at the VA, we're calling on you gentlemen to help us and do everything right. There have been a whole bunch of us. Obviously, the most senior leaders we had are Colonel Dr. Anders Carnegie Bouth, Colonel Dr. Thomas Little, Colonel Dr. Herb Smith, Navy Commander Julie
Dykeman.
These are the leaders who were in the forefront of medical care during Desert Storm, have continued to fight for it. But they're all sick and gone, too. And we need the command staff to jump up and to help us. I mean, this is a responsibility.
Well, let's clarify. Colonel Herb Smith is still with us. Colonel Dykeman is still with us.
Yep, they are definitely there.
We're not pronouncing them over to the angels yet. They're still with us. But one
but
of
Andres
the things,
and Sergeant Major Runge and all of them are gone.
Yeah. One of the things is that people, if you know who your commander was, and if you can get in touch with them and build a rapport with them and get them involved in helping not only themselves, but the troops they led. That's what's needed. We really need, and it surprised me when we had a task force on the benefits and health care for about 18 months. We had some individuals that I would have thought would have been better informed of what was going on. And it was like a whole new door opening to them that there was problems. Major General Flowers, he was a colonel when I met him over there in the Gulf. He was sitting there at a hearing. He had been up there with the Corps of Civil Engineers about New Orleans, and that was back before Katrina. And he was meeting with Congressman Cooksey, who is not there anymore, but Cooksey was on the VA committee on the House side, so he came in to the hearing. He brought the Major General at that time, Flowers, in, and that's the first time I ever saw an impromptu testimony occur, because Congressman Cooksey called up Colonel, Major General then, Flowers, to testify ad lib. And he had some of the symptoms that he, like the rest of us, you soldier up. You keep going in your career and your education, trying to keep your family together, and really not acknowledging he was having sleep problems. He had the symptoms. So, you know, I'm telling people, if you can get in touch with your commander and provide them the education that we're trying to put together out there on websites and Facebook, and get them involved to help their troops, it's going to help us. That reaching out to your old commander and getting them informed will open some doors for us. I'm sure of that. But we've got to go out and really reach out and find them.
And we're just about the end. Has anybody else called in?
We want to thank Jeff for calling in, and guess we can do another call-in show in the future.
Yeah. Gary Knoll, if you're listening, ladies and gentlemen, we need to thank Gary Knoll, incredible, and Progressive Radio Network for all the work that they've done, all the documentary, all the work he's done on the homeless vets. They've been leading the charge now for a few years, setting this together, allowing us to help all of you. Ladies and gentlemen, Desert Storm started 22 years ago with the ground conflict. It's incredible casualties. We're still fighting it and still continuing. We must take care of each other. Demand Congress and the House help us. demand the VA help us, but we have to take it upon ourselves and get it done. Ladies and gentlemen, again, the Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. Warrior Connection provide you information and resources. Use those resources to help yourself, to help your friends, and to help everybody. That's what we need to do. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, everybody. Jeff, thank you for calling in. Gary and everybody and the whole staff there at Progressive Radio Network, God bless you, and thank you for the work you do for us.